Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. We have an incredible conversation in store for you. I'm so excited for you to hear it. Every once in a while, you have those pre-recording conversations where you just know it's going to be a good one. And, you know, not to overpromise, but this one is going to be great. So welcome to the show, Sam.
Hi, no pressure at all, but I do think this one's going to be pretty great too, Alyssa.
Yeah, I have a good feeling. Sometimes you just know, you get a vibe, right?
We're vibing.
I love
This one's a vibe. This podcast is a vibe.
Yeah, and we're two former theater kids, so, like, what could go wrong?
Go wrong? Nothing.
Okay, so longtime listeners will know there is one question that we open the show with, and it's really because, as a former theater kid, I just like drama in my life, and I just want to hear, like, the tea time from other people. So tell me, what is your hot take?
All right, my hot take. Your AI product sucks, and nobody cares about it.
I love that because... Yes, it does. I just wrote an article a couple of months ago about this idea of your AI being your new brand ambassador.
And that's pretty much what has happened in the industry. So if you think about it, like most of our AI products in the world right now were built in an echo chamber that basically was made up of the little pithy black and white billboards that span from SFO onto Market Street. So all of these companies just decided, oh, well, my competitor has AI. I got an AI. And what does it do? I don't know, but we have to have it. So I always joke, I feel like the next we're going to hear is like peanut butter, now with AI. So I'm waiting for it. But yeah, you're right. I think most companies have spent much more on marketing their products than developing them and then also having people adopt them. So at the end of the day, you know, look, we talk about AI as this revolutionary thing. It is, but we also talk about it like it has been around since, what was that, 3 years ago when OpenAI really, you know, flooded the scene? AI has been around since the 1950s. We have had ebbs and flows of AI over time, and it's not a flash of the pan, especially, you know, in the last 20 years, there's been an increase in mentions and research and all of those things, unlike the metaverse, unlike Bitcoin, all of those kind of trendier things. So it's been around the block. Yes, it is revolutionary. Yes, it is going to help us, help our customers, help our growth and our company. But we have to figure out how first. We can't just slap AI on a label and call it a day.
I love that you said that because I feel like people are taking very basic experiences, which maybe it's automated, right? Like, you got an automated email before this, sending out the questions to let you know, like, hey, you're on in 24 hours. Here are the questions ahead of time. That was an automation, right?
Yes.
But I could very easily be like, well, I have an AI-empowered email sending system that leverages blah, 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 and put a bunch of fancy words around it and try to call it AI and make it more than it is. But in reality, it was an email automation with a mail merge. And we've been doing that since the dawn of Excel. So it's not like it's really that exciting. But you're right. AI has been around for a long time. It's just the ability for the general public to access some form of it is something that's fairly new. I consider myself a aggressive early adopter, right? I'm one of those people like, I want all the new shiny things all the time. I tried to get those Google glasses back in the day, like in 2014.
Yes,
they were ugly, but I wanted a pair.
But I wanna
bad. I never got chosen for the program, but it's fine. I'm still not bitter about it. But now I see they're coming back around. Like Ray-Ban is doing these smart glasses, and Meta is doing these smart glasses, and someone else I just saw is doing smart glasses with like a heads up display, right? And everyone's talking about like it's this new innovation. I'm like, bro, we did this like 10 years ago.
You know, like we've been doing this.
And nobody adopted it.
Yep.
Which is the reason it didn't work, cutting back to your adoption.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, it's really funny because it will never be a good idea for a company to create a solution before we figured out the problem. So consumers did not ask for AI. And quite frankly, if you ask most consumers, whether it's B2B or B2C, but B2C specifically, they're terrified of AI. They don't like AI. They don't
want to interact with AI. It's coming for my job.
It's coming for Tom Cruise. Think about it. It was literally the villain in the Mission Impossible movie. I'm sorry if that was a spoiler, but it really wasn't. They talk about it in the trailer.
I think it's been a while. I think
it's been a while.
Seen it by
we
now.
Can do it. Shut up. Yeah, but like, you can't have consumers have that idea about it, and they were just totally going to force this onto them. And basically, at the end of the day, consumers don't care how you solve their problems. It's just that you do. So if you can do it with AI, I always tell people, if you can do it with AI, fantastic. If you can do it without AI, that's okay too. If you can do it with AI and not brag about how you solve their problems with AI every 5 seconds, like, that's probably the best that any of us can hope for. So yeah, like, all of these companies have put a lot of money into the marketing budget and not into the adoption and like the post-sales budget. And I always think about, you know, the IKEA effect, where you place more value on something when you built it than what most people would place on it. I feel like we're getting into this like IKEA effect AI, where people, these companies have built these AI bots,
right?
Systems, algorithms. And so they're like, everybody's going to want this. Why wouldn't they? This is amazing. I made this. And consumers are like, you are not solving my problem at all. So let's keep this moving. So I think they, you know, kind of thinking through that element of it, I think out of the box, at least from the customer, the CX side of things, where I usually, you know, see most of the trends happening, you kind of, they, it's like they wanted to come out of the gate with, this is going to help your customer experience. And that messaging kind of fell short because CX leaders were like, I don't think so. You hallucinate too much. And yeah. So then they kind of pivoted, and they're going after the CFO. They're like, well, this can save you dollars. This can save you. You can cut costs. You can cut your entire, you know, group of people if you want to. And so I feel like they've kind of gone that angle with it. And so really, at the end of the day, like, you have operational efficiency or customer experience, and it's kind of a matrix. I actually have a matrix that they show, like, if your AI project, whether you have developed it or whether you have purchased it, is not fitting into one of those squares, it's not really good. You should go back to the drawing board.
Right. It's just a distraction at that point. And
exactly.
An expensive hobby, if you
a
will.
A very expensive hobby. Yes. And then, you know, at the 2 or 3 years into it, everybody that CSAT was asking for your ROI. And then you have no case studies. You have none of your customer base is willing to say, yes, this has actually helped us, because you haven't developed the training plan, the, like, that end of the post-sales kind of marketing funnel, unfortunately, which is such a shame, because there really are some amazing products out there. It's just they get overshadowed by the crappy ones. Literally, actually, there was a study, Irrational Labs did a study. And now they found that if AI is in the name of your product, with few exceptions, I believe OpenAI was one of them, but it actually decreases the consumer trust in your product,
yeah,
because they've been burned in the past.
I think I want to come back to that, because I was just having this conversation with my team. So, like, we're building a software, right? It's a research mm-hmm. software. My background is in customer experience research, basically. How do you get people to go from I'm interested in your product to I'm ready to talk to a salesperson as quickly as possible, yep, right? On the pre-sale side.
Love that. Yeah.
And so we're building a product that's just basically trying to put how I do that for customers into software. And one of the conversations we had was about using it for post-sales. And I said, we got to be really careful here, guys, because I think this group has been burned a lot. They've been promised a lot of things. They've been told that this is the magic solution that's going to make them better at their jobs and better with their customers and allow them to basically become superhuman. And they've been disappointed and let down.
Absolutely.
And so if we're going to make a promise, we better be able to live up to it. And if we can't, then don't make the promise.
Then don't make the promise. You know, it reminds me of a conversation that I had with a chief customer officer a few years ago. It was right as C-Staff was kind of getting the question of, should we adopt this, should we not? Mm-hmm. And I remember her telling us, she was like, listen, I had a model for headcount. I know when to add heads. I know when we need to scale back. I have the algorithm for that. I don't have any of that for AI. Like, these AI reps are great. These promises you're making me are great. I don't have any historical data on like the 20 and 30 years I have of you know, doing it per seat and per person. So that is a huge obstacle that we're going to have to overcome, that I wish we would spend some marketing dollars getting those case studies. And honestly, maybe on the first couple of customers, maybe you lose some dollars, but in the end, you've got some really fantastic champions for you, which we all know advocacy marketing is the best marketing you can get.
Right. Yeah. It's that earned media, right?
Yes.
Where you've done the work for someone to pay attention to you and to speak positively about you. And I actually just had this. I posted on LinkedIn a couple of days ago about a local sporting goods store. And
nice.
They, it was like a late night order. It's expensive because they're like a brand name only. But I was desperate because we had sports practice the next day for my kids. Went there, ordered these shoes, paid a crap ton of money. I was kind of grumpy about it. But I went there, got there, pulled in the parking lot, got an email that was like, hey, your order's been changed. And of course, I was ready to like lose my shit because
you're ready to go in there and throw
it. I was like, come on, you guys. Like, you said you had it in stock and now it's not in stock. What the hell? But it turns out, no, my order wasn't changed. Actually, when they rung it up, they discovered that the price online was higher than the price in store. So they just automatically refunded the difference. And I didn't have to ask for it. And like, but it's one of those moments where like, here I am on a podcast. I've written a LinkedIn post about them. I'm talking about it on my podcast. I'm going to talk about it forever. It was probably like $2. It was not that much money.
Yep.
But
they got you. But they've got you for life now. Yep.
Right. They noticed that I was paying more. They didn't want me to have a bad experience. And of course, I'm never going to look because I'm going to pick up. I'm not going to go be like, no, did my prices change? Like, but now here I am talking
about it. You handled a dozen. I used to work at Target. I was the front end manager. Yeah. I remember people that would return bread that they got on clearance for 50 cents. So you're one of the few. Bless you. Bless you.
Okay, well, I worked in customer service. I sold shoes for like 4 years at a department store.
Okay, so you get it. There you go.
So I think everybody needs to do that so that you have a perspective on like, what it's like to be on the other side.
Yes. On humanity and life. Yes. I think that's
a perfect idea.
Yeah,
but I loved that experience with Shields because they didn't have to do that. I would have probably never known. And like, I would have just
taken the shoes
and run. Right?
Right? Like they've got you for life now. They're thinking about lifetime value, LTV, and not this transaction right here.
Right. The $2 that they're giving me back, right?
Yep.
Like I said, insignificant money. But also the fact that their cashier who was ringing up my online order was empowered to do it, right?
Oh,
it happened
when they
like
do that.
10
yes.
minutes because
yes.
I think I placed the order. The store opened. I got there within 10 minutes of opening. So they had to have like let someone. It didn't go through an approval chain.
Awesome.
Someone had to say, "Oh, wait, this is actually cheaper if she just came in and bought it in store." And so like the empowerment to allow your team to do what it takes to create a great opportunity for that advocacy marketing.
And
AI
that's one
could never and would never.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. And you know what? Another shout out to them, because that's one of those places where the perfect like crossing of efficiency, but then also a great customer experience. Because back in the day when I worked at Target, I don't know if they still do this, and shout out Target, love them. But yeah, so we had our cashiers, they were empowered. It was $20 or 20%. And so basically, if it was less than either one of those thresholds, we empowered the cashier to make the call on their own. And what that did was it actually increased our checkout speed. So speed score, little piece of advice. You can see every cashier has a little speed score. Please help them out. Please don't dawdle. Please help them. Don't write checks. Come on. So basically what they're doing there is they're creating a repeat customer in you, increasing your lifetime value with them, but also saving money with the number of people that they're able to get through the line or quickly, or that cashier did not have to call a manager over. So it's a good experience for everybody. I wish that more companies would do that. In order to get control, you've got to get control.
And it's so funny that like a lot of companies will say the right things. They'll have the right words on the wall, the right posters in the executive offices, but they don't really necessarily live up to those values. I do want to bring this back to your hot take, though, because as we take human empathy and compassion out of the process, and I don't mean empathy like I feel sad for you, right? Mm-hmm. But the ability to see it from your perspective and put myself in your shoes so that I can create a great experience because I understand you and what you're trying to do and the problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
AI doesn't have that capability. So what are we losing? Yeah. It can emulate that capability, but what are we losing in this customer experience if we're just slapping AI in the middle without any thought processes to the human impact that's about to happen?
You know what's so interesting about that is that, you know, when we were talking earlier, we talk about AI, and I think everyone's mind immediately goes to bot. And that's the marketing machine that has kind of done that. That feels like the entry level place that everybody starts. To the point that, by the way, one time I was at dinner with a friend, and she asked me if every time she chats with her bank, like if that was a bot. I don't know if it is or not, but the fact that she thinks that every time she talks to her bank, that it's a bot, that's interesting.
A lot of times it's probably tellers, by the way.
Exactly.
Like, it's probably a real person on the other side
probably
of the chat.
A real person. She's treating like a bot. I hope she's nice, though. She probably is.
I'm nice to the bots anyway, just in case.
I know, right? They might have feelings. If we think about the entire customer journey from beginning to end, even before it becomes a support issue, there are so many places that you can actually implement AI, and a lot of companies do, where you don't have to worry about whether or not, you know, the bot has empathy for this human situation. So one of my favorite examples is when companies use AI to make humans better at their job. So we think of AI as bots, but AI is really a large language model, LLMs. I'm not in any way authorized to explain AI, by the way. So get someone else to do that.
I know enough to be dangerous and to be a problem. Yeah,
exactly. I know LLMs. But one thing that LLMs are really great for is amassing a lot of information and putting it at your fingertips that you might not otherwise have access to. So being able to spot trends, being able to have all of the details from previous interactions, those kinds of things are really helpful for human agents to do. So one of the ways that I highly encourage companies, especially startups, by the way, to use AI is in those ways that can help them scale a smaller team so that they don't have to add bodies, but they can keep the humans that they have that are amazing and wonderful and actually make them better at what they do. So that's a really great way of using AI that really does consider the empathy, the humanity. It helps improve humans and their experience. And the other thing that I'd like to point out about that is, you know, we talked about training, onboarding, adoption. That goes for human agents as well. So if we think about an agent that we've had, and I like to do this exercise when I'm in a room of CX leaders, and I'm like, think about the best agent you have right now. What makes them so awesome at their job? And a lot of times it's like, they just get it. And you're like, well, why? Tell me what they just get. And it's, you know, they've been there a little bit. They've been there a while. They have institutional knowledge. They've got all of these things. And so it's like, what if you could take a new agent coming in who had the EQ, the emotional intelligence, and the potential? What if you could help to increase their onboarding and help them kind of get over that hump of product knowledge, institutional knowledge a lot faster? And AI can help do that if we set it up the right way. So I'm going to start my rant there, but there are so many different places in the journey that we could be leveraging AI. Also, not to mention reporting. I have this this AI journey map where it's kind of interactive and people can kind of put in a different type of AI in their journey where they think they would need it. And I feel like it's my gift to humanity, not to be, you know, over, not to be like hyperbolic, but there's so much more to AI than bots, and there's so much more to humanity than bots. So maybe we just get over the bots and we start thinking about improving the agent experience, but also like reporting and sentiment analysis and all of these other proactive things that AI can do for us.
I want to go back to something that you said about how can we use AI in our organization to help, right, scale people faster.
Yeah.
Again, to go back to the team that I'm working with right now, we had a huge conversation about we're not just going to slap AI on our product, but we're going to teach people how to use our product to make them, to augment their intelligence. So we use AI, but it's augmented intelligence, not artificial intelligence, because you know, Iron Man is nothing without Jarvis.
Yeah.
Right. He's just a billionaire in a suit. Like you need that augmented intelligence to turn you into that superhero and give you that opportunity. And I think a lot of times people look at AI as my replacement rather than my sidekick, you know, the Robin to my Batman. And that's what we have to figure out is how do we turn AI, but use it as augmented intelligence. And that's all about process and understanding how the tool works and how the tool works in the human world, not how do humans work in the artificial world.
Just reminded me of, I wish I remember who posted it. Somebody on LinkedIn posted this amazing image and it said, I don't want AI to write my books, my article, so that I can do my laundry. I want AI to do my laundry so that I can write my books and articles.
I can create the art.
Yes. Yes.
Do the things that humans we are the only person, the only creatures on earth capable of doing.
Absolutely.
So what can you let your AI do for you so that you can do the things you truly want to do?
I completely agree. I'm a huge believer. So in any CX role or honestly any customer facing role, for me it's about pattern recognition and those things that you know AI I don't think we'll be able to do in our lifetime. Now I know Sam Altman is listening to this, and so please don't take that as a challenge, sir. But that humanity is what makes me awesome at what I do, and it helps me find those traits in others. And I always highly encourage my teams to, if they want to use AI, cool, that's their business. If they do, I hope they do, and I hope they use it to do more than just write something in ChatGPT, which is like the saddest way. Like, create, you know, leverage prompts, like do some of that cool work and use your brain at something. That's my only request for them. Please just use your brain with it and make your brain grow.
Yeah, I love that.
And I say it as eloquently as that too. Just make your brain grow.
Just make it grow. Just create new. So we're going to get sciencey for a second. Create some new neural synapses and stave off Alzheimer's. It's the best way to keep yourself from getting Alzheimer's is to make your brain grow. So
there's your PSA.
Yes, PSA. Don't get Alzheimer's, make your brain grow. Okay.
The summary of this episode.
That is the new title, Make Your Brain Grow. I love it.
Break grow.
Sam, if someone is really connecting with you, where can they find you online?
So I'm on LinkedIn all the time, all day, every day. So that's probably the easiest place. My website is sam-chandler.com, or some people say sam-chandler.com. Feel free to check that out. There's actually some resources. They're freebies. I made them. I didn't put them in a ChatGPT, but some things like I call it my Nexi chart, which is basically efficiency and experience, you know, creating a matrix of AI projects that you can do that will benefit your organization, benefit you, and give you the best ROI. And then I also have an AI journey map in there. And then there's some other fun resources, especially if you're a startup. So yeah, check it out. Say hello to me. Thank you so much. Honestly, it's just an honor to be part of your podcast and be part of this episode. So thank you so much for letting me join.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to let you go quite yet, because I do want to know. you know, we talked about a couple of people in this, you know, between Tom Cruise and Sam Altman and all of the other people that we pay attention to. But when you're thinking about all of the incredible people you've had a chance to meet or that you follow or that you listen to, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with customers?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to answer in two parts. I'm going to say one of them, which might sound kind of depressing, and then I'm going to bring it around. And it's going to end on a really happy note. So if we think about who is changing the landscape of customer experience, how we interact with customers, it's the brands that have the most market share. So it's Jeff Bezos. It's Amazon. Jeff has won capitalism. Whether we want to or not, he's won. So many of our customers' expectations are set by what the Amazons of the world do. And you see a lot of companies following suit. Now, the reason that I'm like, okay, well, that might be depressing to some people because it's kind of like a big box experience, even though like they have what's easiest for the customer in mind. I view that as a transactional experience. If we're bringing it around to retention and what keeps a customer, there's this fun, happy place where brand equity becomes brand loyalty. And so for me, I like to think about Paul Graham, who is the founder of YC. He's done a lot of other stuff. He kind of writes essays now about life and business and all of these fun things. Check out his website. He doesn't pay me to say that, but he should based on how many times I have. But he's got this really great, interesting notion about being a founder and having a startup. And he's got this essay that I believe is called Do Things That Don't Scale. And so one thing that I always recommend to founders and startups that I advise is do not automate yourself out of your differentiator. And so I say that because if we think about the customer experience and how to change that landscape, you are probably not Amazon as you're starting out in your seed stage round, but you can do things that create those recurring moments like what you had at the sporting goods store. And you can probably do those things longer than what you think. So while all of your other competitors are worrying about how do we use AI to automate everything and never have to talk to a human, what if you did a thing like what your sporting goods store did and just noticed that and made a customer for life? Or like Chewy, where, you know, if a pet passes, they not only tell you to donate the food, but they send you a card. And, it, you know, those are the moments that again, those brands are known for that. And then that becomes their brand and then that's how they create loyalty. So that's what I would say. Paul Graham, Chewy, Jeff Bezos is in there somewhere. Can throw in Katy Perry for good measure, I guess, now. Yeah.
I wanna riff on that for a second though, because there's and this is, I bought this, this is like something that's totally coming off the cuff, so you can disagree with me. But my hypothesis is that people don't make rational decisions. They make decisions based on how they feel, and they use rational, logical decision making to justify whatever feeling they felt, right? So like Scheels gave me the money back, right? Gave me that. I noticed I had a great feeling, right? And I can go justify and be like, well, I deserve that money back because if I went into the store, and I could start to create these rationalizations for my feeling, right? And when I go back to buy something from Scheels, I'm going to say, well, you know, I got that money back. So it's kind of like girl math, like free money back to this same store because they gave me money back. But really what I'm doing is rationalizing a feeling that I had.
And Alyssa, you know what that's called? That is called cognitive dissonance.
Yes, get that psychology degree going.
But yeah, that is exactly right. You know, we as humans, we do not like when our feelings do not match the facts. Therefore, we will rationalize them until they do. Not that anyone else in our world ever does that for any reason whatsoever.
You mean twisting the facts to our feelings? No.
No, it only applies to shopping interactions. That's it. Yes. No.
Very specifically.
But that is exactly it. People do things based on their gut feel. And when you put that feeling in their gut and you've made that connection between your brand and that good feeling that they got, it's just like, I believe Maya Angelou said, you know, people remember how you made them feel. So I wish that more brands recognize that. And instead of trying to, you know, go back and forth over a couple of bucks, like, really, at the end of the day, does this matter? Make it easy and give me something that I expected, but then something maybe that I didn't. And you got a customer for life.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great point to end on. Thank you, Sam, for joining me on The Growth Signal. This was incredible. I think we lived up to our expectations.
Heck yeah, we did. Heck yeah. Thank you so much. This was so fun. Anytime you want to nerd out on any of this, whether it's AI, consumer behaviors, or Tom Cruise, like, I am here for you. Please let me know.
I can't wait. Well, make sure you reach out to Sam if you want to chat about any of those things. And thank you for joining us on The Growth Signal.